this pastime, or this group of pastimes. Not only the pastimes that we're reading now, but actually throughout the entirety of the Bhagavatam, we should be well aware of how Krishna is dealing with his devotees. And not only that, but we should simultaneously be aware of how the devotees are dealing with Krishna, the mentality of these exalted personalities. They express it, they express their minds, so we get a glimpse of what the mind of one who is a devotee, one who is suitable for being in the spiritual world or going back to Godhead or advancing quickly in Krishna consciousness. We get a glimpse of the mentality of the devotees as their mentality is expressed through their lotus-like mouths. And when we hear of the mentality of the devotees and also of the mentality of Krishna and how Krishna deals with his devotees, these are great beacons for us. They teach us how we should mold our consciousness. And they give us a glimpse into the personality of Krishna, who is the supreme personality of Godhead. And he reveals to us through his actions why we should give ourselves fully to him. And not only to him, but we should give ourselves to no one else. This is actually the constitutional position of the living entity, to be fully engaged in Krishna's service. And by being fully engaged in Krishna's service, one is truly engaged in the service of everyone. In the same way that when one waters the root of a tree, all the branches are automatically watered. Not in a cold way, in an impersonal way, no. But rather, this is the proper way to give nourishment to the branches. And similarly, the basis of the dealings and affectionate dealings amongst the living entities is based on the strength of the sweet and devotional relationship with Krishna. So we've heard in the end of chapter 7, we've heard two pastimes that were connected really as one, and they in turn were connected to the Kurukshetra war, in which Krishna drove the chariot of Arjuna. And still, we heard that Krishna was still driving the chariot of Arjuna. And Krishna was still protecting Arjuna. Why did Krishna protect Arjuna? Because Arjuna was a devotee of Krishna. What does it mean to be a devotee of Krishna? It means to give one's life for Krishna, to continuously be serving Krishna, be fully dependent on Krishna for shelter and protection. That's what it means to be a devotee. This is called unalloyed devotion, or Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotional service. Ahaitikiya Pratiyata. So, after Krishna saved Arjuna from the Brahmastra of Asatam, and then Krishna solved the problem which had arisen between the conflicting members of the Pandava dynasty, what to do with this heinous murderer, Asatam, who had killed mercilessly, cruelly, horribly, inhumanly, had killed these five wonderful sons of the Pandavas, who were after the battle was completed, there were no other, practically speaking, there were no other members of the Kuru dynasty left on this planet. And he had killed them, this Asatama. What to do with such a person? He obviously should be killed, but yet, because of his position as the son of Dronacharya, the great Brahmana teacher, he should not be killed as well. He should be shown mercy. He should be killed and not killed. Killed, not killed. Killed, not killed. The Pandavas, the different Pandavas took different sides of this. Kill him, don't kill him. Kill him, don't kill him. Spare him, kill him. But then Krishna told Arjuna, he gave him the hint, as it is explained in the Bhagavatam, yes, you should kill him, and yes, you should not kill him. And then he inspired Arjuna with the methodology of performing these seemingly contradictory instructions. And in this way, Krishna was dealing so intimately with his devotees, the Pandavas. How fortunate the Pandavas were. This is actually described in the seventh canto. I don't remember the verse, but there's a wonderful verse after Krishna, after Narada Muni explains to Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's explaining about Prahlad Maharaj. How fortunate and what a great devotee Prahlad Maharaj was that Krishna personally came to protect him. And then Narada Muni said, but you, Yudhisthira, are even more fortunate because not only did Krishna protect you, but he lived with you in your home. He acted as your friend, your messenger, your well-wisher. So the Pandavas are even more fortunate than Prahlad Maharaj. Because Krishna, one's fortune in this world, people have different measures of fortune. There's even a magazine called the Fortune Magazine or Fortune 500. And there's a clubs, the Fortune 500 Club, where the people who are considered the most fortunate people, the highest ranking executives of the most successful companies, they're members of a club, an exclusive club. But if the devotees listed who they considered the members of the Fortune 500 Club, it would be completely different because fortune is not measured in wealth, which is transitory, that will be stolen away by time. Nor is it measured by power, because in this world, truly no one is powerful. Everyone is under the grip of so many superior powers in the illusion that we are powerful. But fortune is measured truly in the intimacy of one's relationship with Krishna. So we should be watching for this. How Krishna is dealing with his devotees. And in that is a great inspiration to give our hearts completely to Krishna. And when the devotees speak, or when Prabhupada in his commentary and the acharyas in their commentaries, when they explain what the deep significances of the pastimes are, we should be very, very attentive and be watching this rasa, this dealing between Krishna and his devotees. So this continues after Krishna deals with Aswatthama and the Pandavas in the most difficult circumstance. Actually, this whole Kurukshetra war was a most, looking at it from the point of view of people being killed, it was the most unfortunate occurrence. Because there were so many millions of people killed, and that meant that there were even more millions lamenting that their loved ones and cherished relatives and friends were no longer on this world. So very, very sad, very unfortunate. So the last verse of the seventh chapter explained that the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief because there were so many family members, virtually because it was a fratricidal war, because both sides were related. Everyone practically knew each other. And therefore, even if the enemy was killed, it was a relative being killed. So ultimately, everyone was grieving like anything. So they were overwhelmed with grief, and they performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. Chapter 8, text 1. Sutta Goswami said, thereafter the Pandavas, desiring to deliver water to the dead relatives who had desired it, went to the Ganga, the Ganges, with Draupadi. The ladies walked in front. Prabhupada explains in his purport the method of offering water to the Ganges, water to the Ganges for the propitiation of the relatives, and how things were done in a very traditional and cultured way. Because after all, thousands of known people were killed. Having lamented over them and sufficiently offered Ganges water, they bathed in the Ganges, whose water is sanctified due to being mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. So the Ganges water, the sanctity, this story is going to be told, this pastime is told in several cantos. We'll hear about that later on in the later cantos of the Bhagavatam. In the fifth canto, it's somewhat described, and then in the ninth canto too, and the eighth canto as well, having to do with Vamadev, and also Bhagirathi Maharaj, Sagar Maharaj. So this Ganges is sanctified, it is very holy. When one bathes in the Ganges, it is not like bathing in the Swan River. One feels completely differently after having bathed in that. I remember the first time I went to India, I was afraid, what happens if I would be bathing in the Ganges, what happens if it feels the same as everything else? But it doesn't. It's wonderful. It is purifying to the heart, to the mind, to the full consciousness. So, after the lamentation and the offering of Ganges water, everyone bathed in this purified holy river. There sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers, and Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and Draupadi, all overwhelmed with grief. Lord Krishna was also there. Citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings, Lord Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. Because the grief has to be experienced, it has to be felt, and then after some time, after the emotional response, then the philosophy can come. Because if the philosophy comes before the emotions are out, it doesn't even enter the ear what to speak of the mind and the heart. So after some grieving was done, then the philosophy came. And what was the philosophy? Lord Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected by explaining the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions. This kalasya means of the supreme law of the might of the Almighty. That means kala, means time. And the reactions to that. Gatim, the reactions to that. Because everyone in this world is moving and acting, trying to move things so that they go in such a way that bring us pleasure. No one wants grief. One wants to act naturally in such a way that no grief comes to them. Pleasure, yes. Grief, no. This is how life goes on. But yet, despite all our activities, despite all our attempts, it is not that we get all pleasure and no grief. No, there are superior forces to us at work. And there are demigods, There are even other, so many personalities more powerful than us. But ultimately, this is the law of karma, that we get certain things good and bad. But ultimately, even more ultimately than it being the law of karma that affects our happiness and our grief, it is ultimately God. It is ultimately Krishna, at least sanctioning, what to speak of for the devotees. So Krishna takes a personal hand in dealing with them, and depending upon how devotional one is, Krishna takes care of that person proportionately. This has actually already been described. According to the devotion, how much one is dependent and devotionally inclined to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates with that person proportionately. So even if we are not great, great, great devotees like the Pandavas, who Krishna is personally, intimately reciprocating with and dealing in their lives in that way with great intimacy, personally present, but yet, even if one makes some attempt, Krishna reciprocates with that attempt and deals with that person. No longer is he directly under the control of the modes of material nature. Krishna is reciprocating. For a non-devotee, it is simply the laws of nature. Samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stina priya. Krishna is not favorable or unfavorable to anyone. It's just the laws of material nature working for the population. But yeba janti tumam bhaktya. For one who is a devotee, maya iteteshu chapyam, I am in that person, especially in his heart. And he, that person, is living in me, living always in thoughts of me, in remembrances of me, surrendered to me. So, it's interesting to try to understand, to contemplate why actions happen. Because we always, in our lives, we find ourselves in so many circumstances. Sometimes we like the circumstances, sometimes we don't like them, sometimes they're mixed, sometimes we abhor the situation we're in, sometimes it's the cause of great stress and anxiety, other times it's the cause of great... But why do these things happen? Because devotees are also in situations. So Krishna's here telling to these devotees that this is the laws of the Almighty. And their reactions, but of course, interestingly enough, the Almighty is Krishna. And he's preaching this philosophy later on. And we hear this in the 9th chapter of this very canto. Yudhisthira Maharaj is grief-stricken that so many people have been killed to make him the king. And he goes to Bhishma Dev. And because these instructions that Krishna, he's telling him here, and the Munis, he's telling him that don't worry, this is all happened by the law of the Almighty. But Yudhisthira is not convinced, and Bhishma Dev finally tells him directly that this is Krishna's will, that's why it's happened. Who can understand why such great devotees have to suffer in this way? Prabhupada, at times, he cited this example about the material world, that even Krishna's mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev, here, they had to be imprisoned. Now who would expect such a thing? After all, he's God, he's the supreme controller. But he has his plan, he has his desire, he has his ishtashakti. Ishtashakti means by his desire everything goes on in this world. And we know, and why the devotee, in the midst of all the turbulence that must occur, because this is the nature of the material world. Again, even Vasudeva and Devaki were placed in prison for so many years, not just for 15 minutes or 7 minutes or a day or two, or 247 days. No, for years and years they were in prison. So we can't expect In our lives, there can be no turmoil. We come to Krishna consciousness in a freshly blooming, enthusiastic, Jai Prabhu mood where we expect everything to be just all roses and charanamrita. Rose petals, no thorns, of course. Just rose petals and charanamrita. And we'll go through life like that. But it doesn't happen like that. Even Vasudeva and Devaki with Krishna as their son were played. No! Haridas Thakur was beaten in so many marketplaces with caned, made an example of. Lord Jesus was crucified and all his followers were crucified. But yet, amazingly enough, the devotees throughout all this can be completely free from anxiety, Vaikuntha. This is most wonderful. This is most wonderful. A little later, if we have some time in this class, I'll read something which isn't exactly the same as this, but it shows how this material world works in, the world works, it goes. The spiritual world, the material world, it goes. Ultimately, it goes by Krishna's desire. But ultimately, even Krishna is sometimes surprised at what happens. Is that possible? He's omniscient by definition. Is there something that God doesn't know? If he knew everything, then how would he be able to enjoy? But yet if he didn't know everything, how could he be God? This is very mysterious. Krishna is most mysterious. And what happens to his devotees and his dealings with his devotees is also mysterious. But what keeps the devotees from being distraught through all the different occurrences that happen to them? It's their faith and trust in Krishna. That he is all good and he specially takes care of his devotees. Although I am not a devotee, I am aspiring to be a servant of a devotee, at least of the devotees. So yet, that confidence that Krishna is protecting me and he is concerned for my welfare and only good can happen to me, and that if there's some bad that's due to me, he's minimized it. This consciousness, living in Krishna's mercy, is a price that one has to pay to go back to Godhead. Jivati om mukti pade sadayabhar. Actually, if one has this consciousness, one inherits the kingdom of God naturally, just like the son naturally inherits the property of the Father. This is wonderful. So the Almighty is preaching here. Actually, we know from the Bhagavad Gita, he's preaching that this is all the stringent laws of the Almighty and they're all reactions. Everyone has been killed. But also from the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, we know that Krishna has told Arjuna that I have already killed these people. I have done it. And I'm requesting you to be an instrument. And yet Krishna is preaching in this way. This is wonderful. How things work in this material world, it is very difficult to understand. In fact, it is impossible to understand until sometimes long, long after. And one sees the mercy of the situation. While it's happening, all we can do is hold on very, very tightly and faithfully to the lotus feet of Krishna in the association of devotees. Without the association of devotees, practically you can't do it. So Lord Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. Here's some of Prabhupada's purport. In our material stage, we can see neither ourselves nor the Lord for want of spiritual vision. But when we are liberated from material affection and are situated in our original spiritual form, we can see both ourselves and the Lord face to face. Mukti means to be reinstated in one's original spiritual status after giving up the material conception of life. Therefore, human life is specifically meant for qualifying ourselves for this spiritual liberty. Unfortunately, under the influence of illusory material energy, we accept this spot life of only a few years as our permanent existence, and thus become illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc., which are false representations created by Maya. And under the dictation of Maya, we fight with one another to protect these false possessions. By cultivating spiritual knowledge, we can realize that we have nothing to do with all this material paraphernalia. Then at once we become free from material attachment. This clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart and thus make one practically liberated from all lamentation and illusion. That is a summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent material laws exhibited in the form of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. The victims of war, namely the family members of the Kurus, were lamenting the problems of death, and the Lord pacified them on the basis of knowledge. Text 5. So the Pandavas were lamenting, and now some comment by Sri Sutta about what the cause of this problem was. And always again, keep in mind Krishna's hand in dealing with his devotees. The clever Duryodhana and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhisthira, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhana were killed by him meaning the Lord. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. Because Draupadi's hair was sanctified in the Rajasuya sacrifice, and Dushasan, well, Duryodhana had called for her, and Dushasan had brought her and touched her and unloosened her hair. And for this offense, Krishna actually decided to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. He would not tolerate his devotee Draupadi being handled. She was such a chaste devotee. He would not tolerate her being handled in that way. Because of her hair being let down, it was tied, sanctified in a bun during the Rajasuya sacrifice, and they had so callously let it down, cruelly, callously, to a devotee of Krishna. Krishna said that all, because of that, all the lady's hair is going to have to come down. And that, and this is one of the cultural point, that when the ladies are lamenting in when husband or beloved has died, this is one of the aspects of their lamentation, that they loosen the hair, the buns, otherwise the hair is kept tightly. So it is loosened and let down as a sign of their mourning. So because of Draupadi's hair being let down, all the Kuru ladies and all the Jatriya ladies, their hair would have to be untied. Krishna had made this discernment. He had made this recompensation. Srila Prabhupada's purport, very important purport, cultural. In the glorious days, or before the advent of the age of Kali, the brahmanas, the cows, the women, the children, and the old men were properly given protection. The protection of the brahmanas maintains the institution of vana and ashrama, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life, because the brahmanas are the head of society. They make sure that society moves always in the right direction of spiritual life. It doesn't become knocked out of perspective. That's the business of the brahmanas. So therefore the brahmanas must be protected to maintain the entirety of the society and culture. 2, the protection of cows maintains the most miraculous form of food, milk, for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain for understanding higher aims of life. So Krishna is namo brahmanya devaya go brahmanitaya cha. He is very especially fond of the brahmins and the cows. And in some senses he is more fond of the cows than the brahmins. One of the devotees who was caring for one of ISKCON's farms years ago, they didn't have any money and some of the cows starved and died. And Prabhupada was furious and said, "You let the cows starve and die? How many Brahmins died?" So this cow protection is such an important part of culture. And on the other hand, when the cows are not protected, when they're mercilessly slaughtered, then that brings so much suffering upon that society. 3, the protection of women maintains the chastity of society, by which we get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. So Prabhupada is explaining this in very, very practical means, practical form. 4, the protection of children gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of begetting a child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhan Sanskar, the beginning of pure life. The protection of the old men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for better life after death. So one can see, one can judge actually how cultured a society is by how well these 5 are given protection. Prabhupada continues, the complete outlook is based on factors leading to successful humanity as against the civilization of polished cats and dogs. The killing of the above-mentioned innocent creatures is totally forbidden, because even by insulting them, one loses one's duration of life. In the age of Kali, they are not properly protected, and therefore the duration of life of the present generation has shortened considerably. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that when the women become unchaste for want of proper protection, there are unwanted children called Vanasankara. To insult a chaste woman means to bring about disaster in the duration of life. Dujashan, a brother of Duryodhan, insulted Draupadi, an ideal chaste lady, and therefore the miscreants died untimely. These are some of the stringent laws of the Lord mentioned above. So this was part of the preaching, that this was the laws, the stringent laws that were being broken, and therefore there was so much disaster. This was some of the, this is what was happening. The stringent laws of material nature. Then, Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Aswamedha Yagyas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhisthira, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. So, this is very, very interesting, as Prabhupada explains it in the purport. Yudhisthira Maharaj conducted three horse sacrifices, and yet his fame and position was comparable to Lord Indra's, who had conducted 100 horse sacrifices. And Yudhisthira was the king of earth, and Indra's the king of heaven. And yet Yudhisthira's fame and glories were compared to those of Indra, although in one sense they were not at all comparable. But they were comparable. Why was Yudhisthira's name so exalted? Because he was a pure devotee. So Krishna caused Yudhisthira to perform these three horse sacrifices. Then, because Lord Krishna was there, he had traveled from Dwarka to take part in the battle of Kurukshetra to help, to ensure that the Pandavas would win and that Yudhisthira would be placed as the king and that Arjuna would be always safe. So the mission was done. Yudhisthira was enthroned the king. The Duryodhana and party were finished. The battle was over. That which had been brewing for so many years was now completed. Now it was time for Krishna to leave. So Lord Sri Krishna then prepared for his departure. He invited the sons of Pandu after having been worshipped by the Brahmanas, headed by Vyasadev. The Lord also reciprocated greetings. As soon as he seated himself on the chariot to start for Dwarka, he saw Uttar hurrying towards him in fear. Uttara was the wife of Abhimanyu, and Uttara was the princess in the kingdom of Bharata. When the Pandavas were exiled, they were there in disguise. They stayed in the kingdom of the court of Bharata, King Maharaj Bharata, in disguise, and no one knew who they were. So Arjuna, part of his disguise, he had also been cursed to become a eunuch. So part of his disguise at that time was that he was the dancing teacher. What was the name? Brihana. He was the dancing teacher for the young princesses. So when Maharaj Bharata finally understood who this dancing teacher was, who this Brihana was, that he was the famous Arjuna, he immediately offered Uttara to Arjuna as his wife. But Arjuna said, I have taught her. That means, I have taught her dancing, but that means she is my student. And if she is my student, that means she is like my daughter. So it's impossible for me to marry her. But since you have offered her, she can marry my son, Abhimanyu. So Uttara was married to Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu in the battle, which is such an incredible story, how Abhimanyu, such a brave and ferocious warrior, even though a young boy of 16, he was killed. It took all the Kauravas, the opposing army people practically, all the greatest of the fighters to kill him. He was such a powerful warrior, even at 16. So Uttara had a child within her womb, an unborn child, and that child was to be Maharaj Prickett. But as soon as he seated himself on the chariot, who was seated on the chariot to start for Dwarka? Krishna. He saw Uttara hurrying towards him in fear. Prabhupada's purport is short but sweet. All the members of the family of the Pandavas were completely dependent on the protection of the Lord, and therefore the Lord protected all of them in all circumstances. The Lord protects everyone, but one who depends completely upon Him is especially looked after by the Lord. The father is more attentive to the little son who is exclusively dependent on the father. Uttaro uvacha. Pahi, pahi, mahayogin. Pahi means protect me. Pahi, pahi, protect me, mahayogin. Deva, deva, jagatpate. Nanyam, tva, dabayam, pashye. Yatra, mityu, parasparam. O greatest of yogis, he who possesses all powers, O Lord of lords, O Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me. Please protect me. For there is no one else. Nanyam tvad. Nanyam means there is no one else, no one other than you. Abhayam pashe. Abhayam means fear. To get remove this fear. There is no one else who can remove this fear and save me from what? Mrityum parasparam. From death. From the clutches of death in this world of duality. Is this only Uttara's position? Actually, there is no one who can save anyone from death except for Krishna. Only God, only Krishna can give us eternal life. We are eternal, but this body must die, and therefore we die when our body dies due to our maya, our misidentification with the body. So it is only by fully taking shelter of Krishna that we can actually become freed from death. But Uttara, like all the Pandavas, fully take shelter of Krishna. She's a devotee. And actually, she was the last person remaining in this world who had seen Krishna face to face. This was her position. And she helped the great-grandson of Krishna make deities of Krishna, to the exact likenesses of Krishna. Vajanab is his name. So please protect me. Please protect me. Why was she afraid? Why was she running to Krishna in fear? Next verse, 10. Oh my Lord, you are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast, my Lord. Let it burn me personally, if you so desire. But please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. Because only the person whom the Brahmastra, because it was a Brahmastra that was shot at her, a fiery arrow of Brahmastra was shot at her, and only the person who it is shot at can see it coming. This is the nature of this weapon. Text 11. Sutta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, because Lord Krishna is patient when hearing the words of his pure devotee, Lord Sri Krishna, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Asatama, the son of Dronacharya, who the Pandavas had just killed and not killed, was seeking revenge from Arjuna because Arjuna had insulted him in such a way that had cut his hair and taken the jewel out and driven him out. He was not finished. He had hurled another Brahmastra to kill off all the Pandavas, all the remaining Kauravas. So Krishna understood at once that Asatama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life in the Pandava family, who was this unborn child within the womb of Uttara. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord is impartial in all respect, but still He is inclined towards His devotees because there is a great necessity of this for everyone's well-being. The Pandava family was a family of devotees, and therefore the Lord wanted them to rule the world. That was the reason he vanquished the rule of the company of Duryodhana and established the rule of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Therefore, he also wanted to protect Maharaj Prickett, who was lying in embryo. He did not like the idea that the world should be without the Pandavas, the ideal family of devotees. So Sutta continues. O foremost amongst the great thinkers, the Munis, because he's talking to Shonaka and the other great rishis, seeing the glaring Brahmastra proceeding towards them, the Pandavas took up their five respective weapons. There were five Pandavas, they took out their weapons because this Brahmastra was aimed by Asatthama to kill all the remaining Pandavas. That means the five of Bhim, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Nakul, Sahadev, and Parikit within the womb. So, the Pandavas, seeing it coming, they took up their weapons. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, having observed that a great danger was befalling his unalloyed devotees, who were fully surrendered souls, at once took up his Sudarshan disc to protect them. So, no weapon, they took up their weapons, but no weapon can stop the Brahmastra. It is an unstoppable weapon. And secondarily, it was already coming fast towards them, and there was no time to stop it. So Krishna saw that a calamity may be approaching his devotees. So he immediately took the situation into his own hand, and he took up his own disc to protect them. Prabhupada explains, Aswatthama released the weapon just to finish all the male members of the Pandu family. Therefore, in one sense, it was more dangerous than the atomic bombs because it could penetrate even the most protected place and would never miss the target. Knowing all this, Lord Krishna at once took up his personal weapon to protect his devotees, who did not know anyone other than Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has clearly promised that his devotees are never to be vanquished, and he behaves according to the quality or degree of the devotional service rendered by the devotees. Here the word ananya vishayatmanam is significant. The Pandavas were 100% dependent on the protection of the Lord, although they were all great warriors themselves. But the Lord neglects even the greatest warriors and also vanquishes them in no time. When the Lord saw that there was no time for the Pandavas to counteract the Brahmastra of Asatthama, he took up his weapon even at the risk of breaking his own vow. Although the battle of Kurukshetra was almost finished, still, according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon. But the emergency was more important than the vow. He is better known as the Bhakta Vatsal, or the lover of his devotee, and thus he preferred to continue as Bhakta Vatsal than to be a worldly moralist who never breaks his solemn vow. So Krishna took up his own disc, and the Brahmastra was coming, and he immediately stopped it from finishing the Pandavas, who were at that time, although their weapons were raised, they were not, it was possibly not sufficient to stop the Brahmastra. But that wasn't all of Krishna's mission. The Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, just to protect Maharaj Prickett, who was in the womb of Uttara, he covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy. So Krishna was outside with his disc, and inside also He was inside protecting the baby, the unborn child within the womb as the Paramatma. This is not difficult for Krishna because Krishna is everywhere. He's in every atom, between every atom, in everyone's heart. So what is the difficulty of him manifesting himself within the womb of Uttar? He's already there. There's no place where he's not. O Shonaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Asvatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled, stopped, when confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Now, later on, because at this time, Krishna had protected the Pandavas with his disc, everyone could see that, and at the same time, which no one could see, he protected Maharaj Prickett within the womb. But not no one could see him. Maharaj Prickett could see him. So this is described later on in the first canto, in the 12th chapter. I'm going to read what Maharaj Prickett saw. O son of Bhrigu, Shonaka, when the child Prickett, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Aswatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Here's what Prabhupada says in his purport. Maharaj Prickett, while in the womb of his mother, was struck by the Brahmastra released by Aswatthama, and he was feeling the burning heat. But because he was a devotee of the Lord at once appeared himself within the womb by his all-powerful energy. And the child could see that someone else had come to save him. Even in that helpless condition, the child Prickett endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. And for this reason, the word vira has been used. So what did he see? What did Prickett Maharaj see while within the womb? He saw that he, the Lord, was only thumb high. But he was all transcendental. He had a beautiful, blackish, infallible body. And he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. He was angry, ferociously infuriated that this Aswatthama had dared to attack this helpless Prickett Maharaj in the womb. As he loitered about, as the Lord loitered there, his club constantly circled him like a shooting star. It was moving so fast. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. Is it difficult for the sun to evaporate a drop of dew in the morning? No. Was it difficult for Krishna to stop this unstoppable Brahmastra? He was observed by the child who thought about who he was. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the Protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions, and who is unlimited by time and space, he disappeared at once. So we may think, oh, well, Krishna is there, and he was right there, and he protected Maharaj Prickett and the Pandavas. But I'm here, I'm so far away. I'm not in Bharatvarsh, I'm here in the most isolated city in the world, and it's a different time. How is it possible that Krishna can protect me? But here we have seen that Krishna is unlimited by time and place. So if he wants to protect us, who will stop him? And if he wants to vanquish us, who will protect us? So therefore, we have some impetus to be on the right side of the line, the devotee's side. There's another reference to this pastime, one verse in the third canto when Uddhava is speaking to Vidura. He says, Uttarayam drita puru vamsa sarvabhiman yuna savai droni astra samplushta puna bhagavata drita. The embryo of Puru's descendant, begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burned by the weapon of the son of Drona, but later he was again protected by the Lord. How is that? He was burned by the weapon and later he was protected. If he was burnt, how is he protected? What kind of protection is that? Prabhupada solves this mystery in his purport by saying, the embryonic body of Parikshit, which was in formation after Uttara's pregnancy by Abhimanyu, the great hero, was burned by the Brahmastra of Asatama. But a second body was given by the Lord within the womb, and thus the descendant of Puru was saved. This incident is the direct proof that the body and the living entity, the spiritual spark, are different. So then Prabhupada says more. The particular living entity was not an ordinary living entity, and by the superior will of the Lord, he was destined to be the successor of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Therefore, when Aswatthama destroyed the embryo of Maharaj Parikshit, the Lord, by his own internal potency, entered the womb of Uttara by his plenary portion, just to give audience to the would-be Maharaj Parikshit, who was in great danger. By his appearance within the womb, the Lord encouraged the child and gave him complete protection in a new body by his omnipotency. By his power of omnipresence, he was present both inside and outside of Uttara and other members of the Pandava family. That's impossible. How can Krishna give him a new body? Yes? No. Yes, it is impossible. But the last verse that we'll read today, the next verse, explains. Text 16. Mamamstaye tiraschayam savischayam maye chute yaidam mayaya devya shrijati avati hantyaja. O Brahmanas, Sutta is saying, speaking to the Brahmana sages, do not think this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. So this is very easy business for Krishna. This is ascharja, though. Ascharja mayi. It is all mysterious, all wonderful. Everything Krishna does is wonderful. Thank you. Krishna is wonderful, yes? The power to do it, or why did Lord Brahma let him have the power to do it? Did he have the power to do it? You will answer that question?
I'm not really sure about this situation.
Had the ability to do it because he did it. If he didn't have the ability to do it, how could he have done it? Thrown the weapon. So your question is, how did he have the ability to do it? So my answer is, he must have had the ability to do it. Wait a second. Okay, then I'll ask you. He must have allowed him to do it. Who can understand the mind? We only have one head. Brahma has four. How could we understand? Maybe only one head said no. The other three said yes. And they said, let's take a vote. After all, it was Krishna's desire. Actually, there was no time. It was too close. They couldn't. They were asking that same question. How is it that Asatthama could be firing a Brahmastra? They didn't expect it, that's for sure. Everything was finished. And we can see when someone has this kind of envy in his heart, this anger in his heart, even when you are 99% finished, you still want to, that 1%, you still want to shop and get back. So therefore, envy is very, 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 very bad. Very bad, because no one can teach us and tell us anything when we're envious. Even though he knew he had done the wrong thing, Asatthama. Still, because he was insulted by Arjuna in that way, he still wanted to get back. Oh. And still he became purified after some time. When there was a combination of the two hitting each other, that was the scorcher. Worse than a Perth summer day. You didn't record all that, did you?
No.
Oh, good. You didn't record any of that, did you?
I said selected parts.
Selected parts. Well, you can.